Welcome to For the Love of Conversation, the podcast that grew out of 3 Minute Storyteller, where we believe conversations connect us and social change begins with the stories we tell. At 3 Minute Storyteller, we share digital stories, video snippets of intimate, messy, expansive conversations with a wildly eclectic bunch of artists, scientists, leaders of all stripes, all who are legendary change agents. Some you may know, and hopefully many you don't. This podcast is the opportunity to bring you into the full conversation. I'm Shannon Mannon, along with my husband Mike and our VW bus Scarlett, who we've outfitted into an awesome mobile storytelling unit. We invite you into the full conversation with us. We're so glad you're along for the ride. Joan Blades trusts us. The golden thread that connects her life's work is power belongs to the people. She has spent her life as a founder of MoveOn.org and Moms Rising, designing technologies, shaping ideas, and creating programs that harness the wisdom of the collective, pushing it down and out where it can spread. Our conversation focused on the latest movement she's building, Living Room Conversations, which uses structured conversations with small groups of people to connect across differences. I've held virtual living room conversations with our 3 Minute Storyteller audience and found the model and their conversation guides to be incredibly effective and easy to use. Conversations are the connective tissue of relationships. To do all the healing, imagining, restringing, and connecting we need to do in the world right now, we need better conversations. Not to change minds or fix or save or even necessarily to find common ground, though that may come. But we need to do this because no culture shift is possible without relationships. And no healthy relationship is possible without good conversations. We are excited to partner with Living Room Conversations to create a new program called Conversations to Invigorate Community. It's a simple, nourishing, effective way to become engaged in your community and ignite conversations that heal, conversations that connect, conversations that matter. This is your chance to become the change agent that you've seen featured at 3 Minute Storyteller. You can learn how to get involved at our website, 3ms.co. That's the number 3, the letter ms.co. And we certainly hope all of you bridge builders, you connectors, you warm places to land, you peacekeepers, will join us in shaping a movement to weave our social fabric together. Now, here's my conversation with Joan Blades. From my understanding, your training, so to speak, is in the world of mediation and law, correct?
Yes, I was an attorney mediator.
Okay, so this thread of bringing people together across divides has been a part of your life from the earliest stages of at least your adulthood. I've heard you talk about how you are a believer in the wisdom of crowds, and certainly the expressions of that can be seen in the movements that you've created, from Move On and Moms Rising to Living Room Conversations. Then another aspect of those are also the fact that they're an open source platform in addition to being crowdsourcing wisdom entities. I just want to talk about, like, how did that philosophy of the wisdom of crowds, like, where does that come from? Where do you trace that to, or how did you get there?
Well, there is a book called The Wisdom of Crowds, which kind of gives you the science behind it, which it's always helpful to have science for people to go, oh, that's, yes, why, of course. But the other piece of, a lot of people don't have the definition of mediation and arbitration quite. Mediation is about giving people the responsibility and ability to make decisions themselves. It's not relying on a third party to make decisions for you. And when people make their own decisions together, you have agreements which are much better crafted to the needs of the people involved. Everyone's core needs are understood and people try to meet them. And when you've agreed to something voluntarily, you're much more likely to follow through. So mediation, you know, is at the very small side of that. And then collectively as a society, the more we can have people really listen to each other and feel, also to feel heard. And when we care about each other, then we're trying to create solutions that meet everyone's really deeper needs. And that's going to create the kind of society we want to live in. And at the time I became a mediator, divorces were a huge cause of trauma for kids. And attorneys were still arguing about whether it was ethical to mediate divorces at that time. Parents, you know, they still had fault divorce. They were getting over fault divorce to no fault divorce still and figuring things out. Now, you know, the wonderful thing is mediation is a norm in divorces, and most parents understand that, yeah, you can divorce the parents of your child, but you're going to be parents together for the rest of your lives. And, you know, just the language used, you know, the mother of my children as opposed to my ex-wife, brings up a whole different set of emotions and realities. And there's that kind of way of how you look at the world taken on a larger scale.
And language is a huge one. I'm going to jump ahead since you brought that up, because I am, you know, you've talked about our filter bubbles a lot, and our language filter bubbles is one of them. And so I feel like when you've, I'm going to jump way ahead into living room conversations, which we didn't introduce, but one of the things that you talk about in sort of the ground rules or the grounding virtues is care with our language, and how much we might not even realize, depending on which side of whatever bubble we happen to inhabit, that the words we use might inadvertently polarize another. Can you talk about how language matters in the work you do?
Language has become a flagging device of, you know, whose team you're on in our society right now. And we actually have something called the Red Blue Dictionary, where you see that the same words can mean very different things to people on different sides of the political aisle. I mean, racism is a term that's defined very differently on the right than the left. And so we're not even communicating when we don't have the same definitions for words. And it's the sort of thing where we really need to find a way to have real communication, because the way we are interacting right now too often is really undermining all of us. And the really cool thing is once we connect with each other, we discover very often that we share way more in common than we realized. Had an immigration conversation a few months ago with communities across the country from each other. And it was JCCs, one conservative, one progressive. And the opening of the living room conversation starts with talking a little bit about your core values, and they both were referring to the Torah. And then it went on, and we started, what I heard is that on both ends of the country, they're going, oh, you're not as extreme as I thought you were. Because when you really start talking, you start, and we agree on more than I realized. And yeah, we have some disagreements. And once you start understanding a little more who it is you're talking to, very often the differences are not as extreme, because our media keeps on digging into the place where it's most extreme on each side. And so our relationships are a really critical way to counteract what, I'm sorry to say, our media tends to be doing to us. And it's really on us to, we have to step up, because unfortunately our media and even our leaders very often are getting reinforced for playing to that part of the human, makeup that responds to fear and anger, because that's what travels, that's what sticks. All the psychologists will tell you that, for even in a, in a marriage, for every bad thing you do, you need to do 5 good things. And that's kind of true of many relationships. And we've gotten to the point where we have self-sorted so that we're not spending time with people that have different viewpoints. And that allows them to become increasingly other. And too many people are dismissing those people. And it's a disaster, honestly, for our society. We need to, I've been learning from the faith communities, and I now talk about, we have to see the divinity in everyone. And that wasn't my normal language. I was talking about respect and dignity, and I still talk about that. But there is something inspirational about just, seeing the divinity in everyone. It makes me go just a little bit deeper. Or maybe a lot deeper.
Yeah. I love that evolution inside of you, because it's not your lead foot, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But somehow that language, that's the power of language again. It just sort of moves in you in a different way. It's softer.
Yeah. And I travel in communities of progressives more than conservatives, even though I'm very intentional about having diversity in my world because of the work I do. I live in Berkeley. And because of the Move On background, I get invited to speak in certain venues. And sometimes when I talk to people, it's like, this is really wonderful talking to people with different viewpoints. It's an adventure in your own living room or your backyard. So many people say, no, don't want to talk to those people. And so I'm asking now, what is it that, when they do want to, what is it that got through and made you want to have that connection? And that language is the language that is, kind of goes to that space where people go, oh, yeah, I'm the kind of person that, sees others in that loving way.
I want to talk about motivation, because when I started intentional conversations in different various ways in my work, a lot of the response I would get sometimes, some people, of course, understood right away, but a lot of the response was, I'm a really good listener. I don't really need any help, and I certainly don't need to go somewhere on a Wednesday night when I've got to be in 30 other places to show up somewhere to practice conversation. So it's the sense of, I get that the world, and especially America, needs help, but I'm good. I wonder, how do you talk about motivation? And it sounds like what you just said prior tried to get at what gets people in the seat to have a living room conversation, or just to be open to this conversing across divides that we feel so strongly that they're the bad guys over there. What have you been learning? What have you been sensing?
There are many different kinds of conversations we can have. And there's the hot topics where we know things are polarized. Some immigration, guns, abortion. Those are topics where we know there's a big divide. But we don't actually need to start there. You know, as a mediator, you know, start with the easy stuff. And there's the beauty of this practice is you can start with some really deep, thoughtful conversations. We have a forgiveness conversation that had me thinking about forgiveness in ways I never have before. And that was just me with myself to start with. And then I'm having that conversation with five other people. And it just deepened my appreciation and thinking on that topic. It's a way to intentionally, you know, get a connection with people that have more differences from you. And it depends on topic, what kind of differences, what are you curious about? We have a digital dialogue conversation about how technology has changed our relationships. Honestly, I don't think the left-right thing matters much at all on that. But you get teenager, 20-something, 30-something, 40, you know, move up the age range, there you'll find huge differences. And it's, these are not conversations about trying to change people. They're conversations about really listening to each other. The perverse thing about that is that's the most likely way anyone's going to change, but you don't change at the time. You expand your understanding and you change your way of working with technology to better fit your own values. Mm-hmm. It's a way of better knowing yourself.
And as much as we can understand ourselves is as much as we can understand anyone else. So that, like, that back and forth, where you're deepening your own understanding of yourself at the same time, simultaneously getting to know somebody else. So through that mechanism of a living room conversation.
Yeah. It gives you a way to go deeper with friends. Because, yeah, there's a lot of times we just have kind of pretty surface conversations. People have book clubs. This is a conversation club. You know, you can do a single living room conversation, but there are more and more individuals and groups that are doing it as a monthly practice. And we're hearing people come back and talk about how this has changed their way of listening, of being in conversation. I've personally grown my understanding of how powerful listening is. You don't think of that. People keep on trying to persuade, and it's a remarkably ineffective way to do so many things.
Turns out data is like the worst thing you can start with, and facts. Right? That's not how our brains work.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, the science tells us that in over 90% of the cases, we make our decisions with our gut or our heart, and then our intellect justifies it. So it's start with the heart, and then you can add on the other part.
You know, you have to go in it without an agenda, because that will certainly be sniffed out immediately if you're trying to change someone. And that inauthenticates the whole thing. But it's only by entering in with that open listening can you ever hope to change yourself too. That's that element of surprise that, oh,
yeah,
I have to be willing to be changed if I expect someone else. There's that element too, that willingness to surprise ourselves.
And I think you have to, you know, go into it with, you know, not an agenda to change yourself either.
Good point.
It's an agenda to just be present. And to be present and to invite a group of people to join you.
There's this quote I pulled out from Jonathan Haidt, who you may see. I see he's coming to your conference, but I love this. And I'm going to read it because I think you live this. If you want to change your opponent's mind on a moral or political matter, you need to first see things from their point of view while holding your own opinion. And if you do enter their view deeply and allow yourself to get carried fully into their story and perspective, you might, if you're lucky, end up with your own mind opening. So it's like that storytelling thing is not just navel gazing. Telling, because living room conversations, maybe you want to describe that, the first two steps of the living room conversation, and then maybe I'd love to hear your response to the to that, how you see stories create meaningful change and healing.
The beauty of this is how simple it is. It's everything you need up online, and it's just six people that have agreed to ground rules and a conversation structure. And it's a container for people to make them feel comfortable sitting down with people they normally wouldn't get a chance to talk to. And then if you end up having a group that sticks together, hey, we can loosen up a little maybe. But the conversation questions are really kind of lovely and go to the personal experiences, so you don't get into, once you start citing data at each other, it puts people in the mode of debate. And debate is not what this is about. And then you talk about, you know, what's your mission or purpose? Or, you know, choose one of the questions that gets to your deeper values, so that by the time you're talking about the issue you've agreed to talk about, you're looking at everyone around there going, you know, I can appreciate something about this person. And once you have that human connection, then you really listen in a different way. I co-hosted a living room conversation with Mark Meckler, who's a co-founder of Tea Party Patriots. And it was on crony capitalism. And in this conversation, when we got to talking about, you know, kind of what we thought was going right, we started to discover we had way more in common about some things. Now, some things we knew we just didn't agree on. And we could like each other and still really disagree about some things. But it turned out that in terms of criminal justice issues, Mark, his two friends, and my two friends, and this was a really diverse group, were in complete agreement. Way too many people in prison, war on drugs, not a success, got to start using evidence-based practices. And that gave all of us this solid ground where we went, oh, why aren't we doing more about this? So it can be a very, when you find common ground, and this is not all focused on finding common ground. It's first and foremost about relationship and understanding. But sometimes you find common ground and you're like, okay, we're going. We can do this. And then the close is reflection and next steps. This is never a debate. When we hear something we don't agree with, we just kind of, all right. And maybe we ask a clarifying question sometime, but often that's not where we go. And that's why I really love it that we're now having some conversation sets where people get together a week later or a month later, and they've had the chance to really digest and think about some of the previous conversation.
Mm-hmm. And is that how you're seeing this work be most impactful? Is in the multiple deepening of relationships? Or,
you know, I don't honestly know where most impact is, because is most impact in individuals' heart changing, or is it action? Or is it a community doing something together?
I after, you know, some years of doing this work, I had a breaking point over the summer with the Kavanaugh hearings. It was a real trigger for me. And you know, I know that was a really painful time for a lot of Americans, but it was interesting to see my own where my unhealed work, I guess, for lack of a better word, was. Because in that moment of pain and in that moment of anger and outrage, and what was happening in those hearings and watching that discourse, oh, the rottingness that was. And I don't think any of us were happy on any side of the way that discourse went down between during the hearings. But it really was this moment where I felt myself draw back in to say, and I called our mutual friend, Debbie, and I said, Molyneux, and I said, I need someone to talk me off the ledge because I am feeling like this whole relationship across the other side is bogus. I want everyone to think like me. Really, I just had this thing. And Debbie, in her infinite wisdom, helped me see the long view and reminded me. But it was just, I tell you that story because I think it's just so telling of our human capacity and our limitations and our potentials. And I just wonder, because I've seen you progress from Move On, although it did start as a very kind of common ground initiative, took on a very progressive flavor over its years. And I'm wondering if you can talk about your own evolution in terms, if that's even how you would call it. Do you know what I'm trying to say? From progressive to really spending your time here now, how that has changed in you.
With Move On, it started with midway in the impeachment scandal, right? And it was a one-sentence petition, censure the president, and move on to pressing issues facing the nation. And you could love Clinton or hate Clinton and agree that that was the best thing to do. We had thousands and thousands of Republicans in addition to independents and Democrats and Green Party sign that petition. But after getting hundreds of thousands of people to show up in this unifying way, it didn't feel right to go away after it felt like leadership thumbed their noses at us. Hundreds of thousands of people have been political for the first time in their lives. And so the We Will Remember campaign was about electing leaders that better represented our values, which is what good citizens do. Well, as soon as you get involved in electoral politics, that's an adversarial process. Well, politics became, it was apparent there was a huge amount of dysfunction, right? And Moms Rising is okay. People don't hate mothers. There's a huge bias against mothers and hiring, wages, and advancement. And I, helped grow a business. And I'm going, oh yeah, this is a systems problem. Because it's not that we hate mothers, it's just that as a society, we've moved from a situation where mothers stayed home and took care of their kids to where most mothers have to work. And that means we need to have infrastructure that supports parents working. And this is what kids need. So, out of all countries in the world, there's two that have no paid leave for new parents. That would be Papua New Guinea and the United States of America. We literally have mothers going back to work here days after giving birth because, shall I feed the family or shall I take care of the new baby? Moms Rising has become just about family economic security and families together. And I love Moms Rising. It's awesome. It became clear at a certain point that going directly to the dysfunction, which is our increasing separation, was what I thought would be the most powerful thing to do. If somehow we can create a movement of people that say, we're going to have to be in relationship even when we disagree. The United States has always been very proud of being a country where there's religious freedom and we live peacefully with people who have all sorts of different religious beliefs. And we have somehow moved to the space where we're having a hard time living peacefully with people that have different political beliefs. This is not who I think we want to be. We want to be people that live peacefully and have a robust, vibrant society together. And I think we can do that. But right now we have certain of our infrastructure that's pushing all the buttons that trigger us. And we need to turn that down and find a way to really get to the who we want to be rather than be manipulated by, you know, media and other influences that push us towards our fear and, you know, anger buttons.
And you believe in the power of the grassroots. This is circling back to the wisdom of crowds and open source, that the divine in you, you know, it's a fundamental belief system that we have a wisdom. I would call it a divinity that connects us, our soul, to something greater. Maybe others wouldn't see it like that. But to harness that wisdom and to create space in the grassroots movement, because I think our challenge now is that so many of us feel disempowered. We feel at the mercy of the whims of these really complex, really dysfunctional systems across the whole nation, from, like you said, healthcare to education to politics to on and on and on. As you've spent your career in grassroots movements, help give us a sense of what's possible.
So things have changed, and they can change in big ways if it's the right moment. Yeah, there are tipping points. Mm-hmm. So I believe collectively we can create a tipping point. It's if we can have this experience and share it in a way that travels. Mm. There is some research that suggests 3.5% of the population can be enough to change culture. That's doable. The thought experiment I've been sharing recently, you know, whatever your top issue is, consider everyone in DC in leadership wakes up tomorrow morning and that's their number one issue. What's the outcome? I've become convinced, because healthcare has been a number one issue in DC for decades. And what do we got? We have the most expensive healthcare system in the world, and we're not in the top. Even in the top 10 in terms of outcomes. That says to me that we have to be able to work collaboratively. We have to have everyone's best ideas in the room to have good outcomes, great outcomes. If we're going to deal with really complex problems, we need to be working collaboratively, try something, adapt. We need to be agile.
Can you talk about a time when you had a perspective, or maybe not even for yourself personally, but one of the issues that you were connected to or saw happen, where, you know, you let's say we had a progressive agenda and we had thought, this is the way we need to make this happen. And, you know, someone of a conservative perspective came in and shed some light on something and it became much better. Is there anything specific you can talk about as an example to say, like, this is how this works. This is not just lip service to hunky-dory, we all need to work together. There's like legitimate practical policy improvements because of this.
In terms of practical improvements, I'll stick with the climate issue. Yeah. Because one of the people I became connected with through this work, his name's Rod Richardson, and he's a free market spokesperson, and he believes that that's the way to deal with climate change. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, would progressives be okay with clean tax cuts? And so we got an expert living room conversation together about clean tax cuts, which, you know, he's got me thinking now, you know, the concept that there are billions and billions of dollars that are not invested, and that if you could make it more attractive to be investing in clean energy, that could be more effective than government. Possible? I hope he's right. That would be great. That's happening. Now, is it happening at the scale we want yet? No. But we can do this if we start really connecting the dots.
And I like how you nuanced, this is not about living room conversations or any of this work. It's not about finding common ground solutions. But we have no hope to find common ground solutions if we don't at least start with, because we're such action people, right? We're so biased towards what can I do tomorrow to change the world. And this is a long game, right? I mean, this is not a immediate fix.
Yeah.
It's not intended for that.
The interesting thing is I keep on coming back to the issue of climate change because I have these really smart, wonderful friends for whom they don't have any urgency around this. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to understand it better still. It actually calms me a little bit. You know, when you're with a bunch of people that are very, you know, upset, it travels. And when you're with people that are a little calmer, it's good. And I hope they're right. I do hope that they're right, that there isn't the urgency that I believe there is. But I think together, we might actually make more progress. Some folks that believe that leaders are the creators of cultures, and other people that believe we are the creators of those leaders. It's not clear which way it goes here. And, you know, I'm all for us owning as much of this power as we can.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about using 3-minute storyteller videos to ignite conversations in your community, go to 3ms.co/get involved. Also, be sure to check out livingroomconversations.org for ways to join some of the incredible conversations that are available virtually or the ones that are cropping up throughout the country in communities just like yours. We're so glad you were a part of the conversation. And if you liked this one with Joan, please share it on social media using #3MinuteStoryteller and #LivingRoomConversations. Thank you so much for being in conversation with us.